The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You're up, Russ?
Yeah, very well, Justin. How are you? Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm not too bad.
Good.
And, I think if I'm looking at it, did the shares sort of go up on the interims recently on AJ Bell? Was there good results? Was everyone happy there?
They did. Yeah, they did a bit. I mean, I've got to be careful what I say because I'm a shareholder, so there's a potential conflict of interest here. But I'm a happy shareholder. There's a big increase in the dividend, which is always nice. But yeah, it was all very much according to plan. If anything, I think expectations were raised for the rest of the year, and the shares have popped a little bit. I mean, they're way off their peak. I mean, they did get to a very, very high multiple of earnings at one stage in the wake of the IPO. And I think what's happening is that from a as dispassionate perspective as I can manage, it looks to me as if the earnings are sort of growing into the rating, as it were. So the rating's coming down over time as earnings growth comes through as expected.
But
touch wood.
Yeah, but the entire market, so, there's few exceptions, but the entire market's sort of down, isn't it? Especially in the investment rate. People are sort of worried, aren't they, these days about investing? They're probably the best time to invest, actually, long term. So,
I guess the other challenge that you have short term is, if inflation's putting the hammer on people's pockets, then they might have less to save, is one potential challenge. But we're still seeing, touch wood, certainly on the first half numbers, strong customer acquisition and possibly market share gains as well. So, but as you say, over the long run, I think the savings market still, it's an important one because, as you say, we all need to save. Relying on a government that's got no money to fund us through our dotage probably isn't a very good idea.
Mm. Yeah. And just looking at it, just top line macro here, it means we get lots of sort of bearish news coming up around housing and all that stuff, and the mortgage market is still to bite. But I think, has the market itself sort of priced us in? Because I've seen some house builders, they haven't gone any lower than they have like a couple of months back. So even though we have all this bearish news out, the market has tend to price us in, doesn't it?
I house builders are really interesting because, they've derated massively. I know that Crest Nicholson got an absolute thumping on Thursday when it flagged higher wage inflation as any reason why its expenses were going up more than expected or initially forecast. But it's trading on 0.7 times book value.
Yeah.
And it's got a net cash balance sheet. So you kind of think, we know it's going to be tough. And maybe the last 10 years profits have been artificially goosed a bit by George Osborne and Help to Buy. But over the long run, people still want to live in a house, still want quality dwellings. And I think, again, what you might end up with is a period whereby house prices don't go up very much, but they might not go down very much, and wages will slowly catch up. I mean, the big challenge for me with the housing industry is you look at the Halifax UK house price index. It's what's the average house price? About £285,000. Mm-hmm. And the average UK salary is about 34.
Yeah.
Now, that's quite a big multiple. Even for a couple, it's quite a big multiple, right?
Yeah.
So I think in that respect, Help to Buy boosted demand, didn't boost supply. Duh. So what went up? Prices. So Help to Buy didn't really help to buy that much, did it? It helped people to leverage up and stretch themselves. But I don't think it necessarily actually made housing more affordable for people over the long run. So I think that's still a challenge for house builders. But if you've got some house builders trading at big discounts to book value, then, a big drop in profits or a drop in house prices is, I think, to some degree, probably already factored in. Mm-hmm. And they're very sensitive to interest rates. So if the Bank of England, ever does pivot, they would be to cutting rates. I think house builders will be one of the sectors that's potentially most sensitive to that.
Yeah. Well, oddly, looking at Crest Nicholson, is it the same with they hit 170, 169 a share in October, and even after that profit warning this week, they're still at 229. So they're still above their low. And I'm thinking, this is probably the way the market's going. As the market found the bottom, we're going to be sort of in a range, and it's going to seem like we're going to new lows. But I don't think Crest Nicholson was at like over £4 a share a few months back, in July last year, in 2021. Yeah. So they've come down a long way. And yet we haven't revisited the lows. To me, that says maybe the lows are in, unless we get some really bad news going forward.
I think, I appreciate, we've seen all of the news recently from banks and building societies, are they raising mortgage rates? So we're aware that lots of people have got to roll over, and that will, put, you know, again, potentially have a knock-on effect upon consumer spending. But, you know, at some stage, the Bank of England, I'm sure, will cave in, and it will cut interest rates, and builders will be very sensitive to that. And I think the good news for builders now is that we went into the last downturn, which, let's face it, was an absolute whopper in 2007. And the quoted house builders went into that between them with £4 billion of net debt. They're coming into any downturn now with £4 billion of net cash.
Yeah, exactly. The opposite. So, many builders have no debt on their balance sheets.
So, again, that race memory, when a lot of them had to raise money in a sort of almost existential crisis, I think you've still got generations of managers who remember that from 15 years ago. Now, whether that's the case in, say, one or two or three downturns' time, that's probably unlikely. They've probably gone back to doing daft things like leveraging up and making big acquisitions at the peak of the cycle. Yeah. But at the moment, the current management teams remember 15 years ago and are doing their absolute utmost to make sure that... And also, let's face it, we had a bit of a nasty surprise in 2020 as well, when everything shut down for 9, 12, 15 months. Mm-hmm. So in that respect, again, companies, I think they are husbanding their resources very carefully. I've no doubt it's going to be tough for house builders. I mean, Crest Nicholson's completions were down by about a fifth in the first half of the year. I'm sure it is going to be slow out there, but I think over time wages will probably, you know, start to catch up and, you know, help to make housing more affordable. And there is still very strong demand out there, and builders have got land banks and they're ready to go. So I think they're prepared to weather the storm and they'll be very sensitive to any upturn. So it's going to be a bumpy ride. But I think, you know, they could be, if you're really patient and really brave, that they could be quite interesting, as you say, because at the moment they aren't showing any inclination to go back to the lows, which is intriguing.
Yeah, and a lot of them paid nice dividends. In fact, but you say there's still demand. Have you seen that this morning? HSB pulls new mortgage deals after a flood of demand. This is until Monday, to ensure that we can stay within our operational capacity and meet our customer service commitments. We occasionally need to limit the amount of new business we can take on. And so they, they removed all its residential and buy-to-let products for new customers, with deals becoming available again on Monday. So it's only a temporary thing, but
I guess it'll be interesting to see how they reset the pricing, I suppose.
A lot higher. but
in the end,
they're back on, but they're more expensive.
Well, that's what you'd expect. That's what you'd expect. I mean, in the end, high demand means higher prices, generally. Yeah, but we will see.
Yeah, and you say Crest, a bit of a profit warning. Another profit warning, Croda.
This is really interesting.
So, come on, what's happening?
It's a FTSE 100 chemicals company, and you know they've guided profits down around 13% to the midpoint of the year range. And surprise, surprise, the shares are down 13% as you and I sit and talk to you right now. So no prizes for imagination there from the market necessarily. But I think why Croda's interesting is it's really been one of those much cherished quality compounder stocks that, you know, it's generally got a very consistent track record of earnings growth, a phenomenal record of dividend growth that I think annually goes back to 2002. And over that period, the dividend has risen tenfold, from 10p a share to 108p a share.
Wow.
So if you think about it, if a dividend's going to tenfold, there's a pretty fair chance the share price is going to go up over time. Because you think about it, if initially we were starting off with a share price of a pound and a dividend of a penny, if that goes up a penny a year for 10 years, you can't tell me the share price will be a pound if the dividend's 10p and looking pretty safe.
Yeah.
I mean, just the share price is just going to go up, right? So I think, and Croda is a really well-run company. It's had the same CEO for a decade. It doesn't do anything daft. It uses bolt-on acquisitions to supplement existing momentum. And it's got pricing power, because it's a provider of raw materials and chemicals that are feedstocks for other things. It's a big supplier into things like skin creams and face creams and personal care and pharmaceuticals. You think of what profitable industries they are. Well, its customers, Croda, is one of the very, very few suppliers. So it really does have pricing power. So I think this has doubly caught people by surprise, because they're talking about, a bit of a slowdown for vaccine demand, which post-COVID is entirely understandable, but they're also flagging some destocking in some of their agriculture and other areas. And I think that's what's caught everybody off, and indeed management off guard as well. And that's why the shares are down 13%. Now, you know, we all know that growth companies can be incredibly powerful things, and Croda has just demonstrated it. But, you know, there are few worse investments than a growth company that then disappoints on growth.
And
the reason for that is, coming into today, Croda was trading on 25, 26 times earnings. The FTSE is trading on, 11, 12? So you've got to deliver on those numbers, because if you don't, your earnings forecasts are going to go down and your rating's going to go down at the same time.
Yeah.
Because price times earnings equals share price, right? So if the E goes down and people think, oh, it's not quite as safe a company as I thought it was, the P will go down as well. So that's at the moment, it's interesting that the P isn't changing much at Croda. It's the E that's going down 13%, and so the share price is down 13%, initial reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Now it will be, will analysts and investors think, maybe this isn't quite as rock solid as I thought it was. Will I start to trim the P back because I'm less confident in the company's product? It might just be a one-off stumble. The destocking thing might fly, might be the truth, might be the real reason. But it's interesting. And I think it's just, the I guess the lesson from Croda is don't mistake quality for safety, because if you overpay for something, it's inherently dangerous no matter what a good company it is.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I think that's, and Croda's traded on high. But if you look at the chart, I'm guessing it probably peaked at 80 quid.
No, well, I look at it, it really shot up in the last couple of years. At the end of 2015, it was 20 quid a share. At the end of 2021, it was £100 a share.
100?
And all of a sudden, it's come down very quickly from December. It went down to sort of almost 60 quid from December 21 to March 22. So in 4 months, it lost almost, you know, what, 40% of his value. And it's been going sideways a while, but this today is ticking down below a range of like 50, 60 quid was the bottom of the range. Now it's dropped below that to 52 quid now. So, yeah.
If you think it was on 25 times earnings at 60 quid coming into today's numbers, what on earth was it on at £100?
Yeah.
You know, I think, again, that drop will have therefore been that rotation into value that we saw when interest rates started going up. And it will have also been, actually, the multiple on this thing is huge. And again, higher interest rates just aren't good for growth stocks.
Yeah.
Because of the maths of it, in that you're discounting a lot of future growth as interest rates go up. The discount rate goes up, so the long-term equity value of the cash flow goes down and the theoretical share price comes down. So I think that would have been a lot of that. And also probably the fact that some of the upside may have come from, you know, making these lipids for COVID vaccines will have provided a bit of an artificial boost. But yeah, you're still paying 25 times earnings, still paying a big premium to the market. And maybe it's not quite, you know, there's a few other things to think about. But in the end, yes, it can be a great company, but it can still be a poor investment if you overpay and pay the wrong price.
Yeah, do you know what? A similar stock to this actually is worth looking at is Future PLC.
Advertising.
Now, their growth has been phenomenal. So they've done 57% or 58% compound annual growth since 2017. But of course, advertising is largely what they rely on, because they've got about 250 websites, quite well known, a lot of them. In fact, they've also got Go Compare and all that. But they've got Country Life and all this stuff. But they've got loads of websites. CEO has been the star there. He's just stepped back.
She stepped back. Zillah Bing Thorne.
Yeah, that's right. And it's literally dropped off a cliff. We've gone from 40 quid down to 7 quid a share.
And he bought
like 800 grand's worth at 888. It's now at 7 quid a share, pretty much. And that's right. When the growth isn't there, and it's a growth company, they've been growing for years. And, hang on a sec, you know what's the, and the PE of that was at one point, I think, way over sort of 40, and now it's down about 5. I think momentum's against it, but it's worth keeping an eye on this company. And there's worry about AI as well taking over that part of, you know. Yeah. So yeah.
And my other gripe with Future would have been it was a serial acquirer.
Yeah, well that's what you do wonder,
you know, with those companies. If it's acquisition-led growth, you always need the next deal to be bigger than the last one to keep the momentum going.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't looked at the balance sheet of Future. My guess is there's probably a bit of debt on there.
In the end, the
deals have to get bigger. And the bigger the deal gets, the greater the risks, the more the debt potentially, or the more the equity raising. And eventually, you're probably going to pick a deal that doesn't quite go according to plan, and that's when there's trouble. And I don't think Future's necessarily encountered a deal that's gone wrong, but as you say, the market is definitely not as cozy as it was for them. And now the CEO's hopped it. I think that a lot of people thought, oh. And as you say, the rating was just really high for acquisitive-led growth. I don't mind acquisitions at all, but I'd rather go them with down the Croda model of using them to supplement momentum that exists rather than create it where it didn't necessarily exist.
Yeah. No, it'd be interesting to see if it turn this around. So let's have debt. On 31st of March, the interims, the debt was 421 million. The operating profit is about 83. So if you look at that, it's about what is it? Yes, 2.5 times operating profit. Their debt is there, so it's
not too bad, but yeah. You know.
But yeah, I mean,
if anything goes wrong, however, that could start to look quite uncomfortable.
I mean, so. They do say they have a formula for acquisitions, but of course we can.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
Dr. Jekyll had a formula.
Yeah, look at that turned out. It's an interesting company because, like I said, they are, you know, excellent margins on that company and they're very profitable. But like I said, when that growth slips away and it's almost a perfect storm at the moment for them because the advertising market, you know, you're in a recession. People tend to pull their advertising budgets, all that stuff. It's the first thing they pull. And then you've got less people buying stuff anyway. And then you've got there's this threat of AI. I don't think that's such a big threat at the moment, but they're worried about AI could threaten their business model a bit. But I don't know. Have you used any... AI, a ChatGPT or anything, Russ, yourself?
I personally haven't, no. Right. So my feeling on AI from an investment perspective is, to me, this feels a little bit like where we were with the internet in the mid to late 1990s.
Yeah.
Is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad?
Yeah.
Who are going to be winners? Who are going to be losers? Because there'll be both. And in the end, there'll be some big winners, some of which might not even exist yet, or are tiny, and there'll be some big losers that are currently seen as entrenched winners. Yeah. In the end, the internet bubble in 2000 burst.
Yeah.
But in the end, the internet did even more than anybody dared imagine it would do in 2000. It just so happened that the valuations at the time outstripped the growth that was available, and I think you'll probably see the same again this time. And I know that Nvidia is the poster child for AI right now, but anybody wants to pay 35, 40 times sales for a stock, good luck. I don't think that'll end
well. Do you know what? Give it a try, just as an experiment, right? ChatGPT. If you're doing if you have a subject you need to write about,
I'm constantly writing. My fingers are like stumps by the end of the week.
Well, if you've got a brain freeze, put it into there. You'd be surprised. I showed my kids this week; they were stunned by it. I said, give me a homework topic you've been working on, a story. So you type it in, and it comes up with a phenomenal story within seconds, and even blog posts. I said, write a short blog about this company, and it'll do it within seconds. And of course you can copy it and change it, but the speed is phenomenal. And even my son Monty's a fan of Tottenham, is Harry Kane is his idol. I said, go on, type in there, Monty was playing a game and his hero came along to watch him, and it came out with a really intricate story about him, you know, paragraphs long, within seconds. And you think, that is phenomenal.
That is quite scary.
It is quite scary, but give it a go if you're ever stuck on a topic. Now, I'm not saying you plagiarise it completely, but it'll give you ideas.
I'm often stuck, I tell you.
And the thing is, though, what people don't understand is, I didn't realise this, ChatGPT, the data only goes up to September 2021, because that's when it can accumulate that. It has to stop there.
Oh, so crumbs. Quite a lot's happened since then.
Yeah, it accumulates lots of data, so it's accurate at that time. So if you ask anything recent, like, give me the financial results from this company, it says I can't do that. So
you might even think Tottenham are still quite good, might it, as well?
Yeah, that's a good point. No, I think you have to come through the back of the mat, actually, to be fair.
Sorry, that was naughty. Sorry, Monty, that was naughty of me.
Marvellous stuff. Thanks for that, Russ. Speak next week.
Pleasure.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.